Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Supreme Court to abused detainees. You can sue the bad apples, but maybe not the tree. The court ruled yesterday in the case of Javed Iqbal, a Pakistani immigrant living on Long Island and known as the cable guy. Iqbal was a cable guy. He was detained after 9/11, never accused of terrorism of any sort, and allegedly abused at the Federal Detention Center on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. Here is Javed Iqbal speaking to WNYC reporter Marianne McCune in 2003 about his treatment.
They put the leg chain and drag on the floor. They put me on the stomach and they drag all around the room, you know. So I was bleeding here, whole floor. And same thing on the left-hand side leg, same thing. I was a cable guy, yeah. No criminal history, nothing. Does anybody have answer for this question, why?
Javed Iqbal then sued then U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft and FBI Director Robert Mueller. But the Supreme Court yesterday said he may not. So let's look at the details and the implications with so many more detainee abuse cases coming to light. With us now, Alex Reinhart, the attorney representing Mr. Iqbal, and Nina Bernstein, New York Times correspondent who covered the original incident. Nina, welcome back, and Alex Reinhart, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Nina, you covered this in 2006, at least one of the articles of yours that I saw. What were you able to document as a journalist that the government did to Mr. Iqbal when he was in custody at the Brooklyn Detention Center?
Well, I think the case of Javed Iqbal really is provided this personal window on abuses that had been well documented by the Justice Department's own Inspector General. You know, we're talking about solitary confinement with lights on 23 hours a day, beatings, punitive body cavity searches, cold, hunger, acts of sexual humiliation. I mean, the array of abuses at MDC that were documented by the Inspector General really could have raised the question of, were we operating a little Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo light in our own backyard? But the lawsuit that Iqbal and another plaintiff, an Egyptian, filed were really brought it home, you know, made it personal.
But just to give us that broader context a little more deeply, because a lot of people haven't heard this, this isn't just the case of this individual who claimed this mistreatment and filed the lawsuit. There was an actual U.S. Justice Department Inspector General's report, you're saying, that found a pattern?
Yes, absolutely, and videotapes as well. I mean, basically, what happened is that this maximum security federal jail designed in Brooklyn to hold pretrial criminal detainees like big drug dealers and mafia bosses, became the place after 9/11 where hundreds of Muslim and Arab immigrants were swept up and thrust, and in what was called a special housing unit of MDC. These immigrants who had been labeled persons of interest to anti-terror investigators on really the flimsiest of suspicion or no suspicion at all were held for months in these very harsh conditions. And there was this Inspector General's report, actually a series of reports, that found that abuse had been widespread. And there were videotapes that were found by the Inspector General after officials had lied and said that they didn't exist. They'd already been destroyed. A box was found, and there were supplemental reports that were issued. But I think that at the time that the first report came out, at least, there might not have been so much of an ear to hear this, especially in New York, where I think, let's face it, the feelings after 9/11 were, round them up.
Well, credit at least to the Bush administration's own Justice Department for having been willing to expose these things when they discovered them. Alex Reinert, did you and Mr. Iqbal sue the guards involved as well, or just the Attorney General and FBI Director of the United States?
Brian, we sued the individuals responsible for the discrete instances of misconduct, that is the low-level line officers. We sued their supervisors, we sued the warden, and we also sued the high-level officials in the Department of Justice. We had different theories as to why each of those defendants was responsible, but our theory was that they each were and are responsible for what happened to Mr. Iqbal.
Why did you sue people that high up the chain?
Well, it was clear to us from the Inspector General's report and from the general response to September 11th that there was a policy, a widespread policy of treating Muslim, Arab, South Asian detainees as terrorist suspects without any other grounds other than their race, their religion, their national origin. And that clearly contravenes the spirit and letter of the Constitution as it's been interpreted by
the court. They at least ordered that sweep. That's not to say they ordered the kinds of things that the Inspector General found or that Mr. Iqbal described in that clip, the leg chains, the dragging on the floor, the bloodying of him. So the Supreme Court ruling yesterday against you and your client was 5-4 with the usual right-left split on the court, which means Justice Anthony Kennedy, as usual, provided the swing vote. What's your understanding of the rationale for denying your suit?
Well, our understanding for the narrow rationale is that our complaint simply didn't provide sufficient factual detail for the allegations against these defendants. Now, the court didn't say we can't go forward against them. They didn't say that these individuals can't ever be sued, which is important because that was, to some extent, the natural extension of the argument the government was making, was that they could never be sued where they responded to national security emergencies. And the court clearly rejects that. But so certainly our view is we have to go back. We have to amplify the allegations, and we're prepared to do that. And so for our case, we think this is a detour. For other civil rights cases, it has the potential to be very broad.
So basically, tell me if I understand the ruling correctly. Basically, the court only said you may not sue the government officials just for ordering the detention of your client unless you accuse them of also ordering the abuse.
Well,
is that about right?
That's close to right, Brian. They said we in fact weren't bringing a legal claim for the detention. We were only bringing a legal claim for the differential
abuse.
Treatment and
yes.
for the abuse. And so they said we need to allege that more specifically. That's essentially what they said.
Do you think that's a fair standard, by the way, or an unfair standard?
Well, I think it's a fair standard. The question is whether or not it was fairly applied to the complaint in our case. I mean, one way the court got to its decision was by ignoring or saying that three sets of allegations they would not treat as factual. They would treat the legal word for them is conclusory. That's the language the court used. And they said because they were conclusory, they didn't have to be taken into account. So once the court eliminated those allegations, it was easier for the court to say that we had not sufficiently alleged a cause of action against these individuals.
We have a few minutes if anybody wants to call in on the Javad Iqbal case decided by the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday, at least this piece of it, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Did you ever even know about the U.S. Justice Department Inspector General's report about the treatment of detainees right here in Brooklyn? We reported it on the show and this station. Didn't get that much attention in the New York area. 212-433-WNYC, or post a comment or a question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Nina Bernstein from the New York Times, are there, to the best of your knowledge, any detainees being held presently in Brooklyn who this ruling might also affect?
Well, I guess the way I would answer this is to just say that I think it's worth mentioning that Metropolitan Detention Center showed up not that long ago when I was trying to find out what happened to a 21-year-old El Salvadoran who had been swept up in a Dawn raid on Long Island. It had been billed as an anti-gang raid, but like a lot of the people arrested, this guy, Marvin Lopez, had no criminal record or gang connection. You know, he packed farm-grown baby vegetables and rosemary for restaurants in Manhattan, you know, working for the former chef of Lutece. And it turned out, you know, 2 weeks later when he finally surfaced, and because it had been unable, we'd been unable to find him, he'd been held incommunicado at MDC, then sent to the Wyatt Detention Center in Rhode Island in shackles, then to a New Jersey jail with no chance to make a call. So, you know, we don't really know necessarily who's being held, but the use of various detention facilities for immigrant detainees did not end with the aftermath of 9/11.
Do you know, by the way, Nina, the context of Mr. Iqbal's original detention? What was it that led the government to look at him in the first place, pluck him from his home in Long Island, and lock him up in Brooklyn?
Well, the original tip or why they went to his apartment, I'm not sure, but one of the reasons that they decided to term him a person of special interest is that he had a copy of Time magazine with the cover picture of the World Trade Center in flames, and there was also documentary evidence that on 9/11 he had, by coincidence, been at Federal Immigration Headquarters renewing his work authorization. You know, so that's the kind of thing. I think there were, in the case of the other plaintiff who settled for $300,000 in 2006, Ihab El Megrabi, who had a restaurant near Times Square, he had been had the bad luck to have a landlord who was Muslim who had once applied for flying lessons. And so, you know, it's coincidence being in the wrong place and the wrong time, or, you know, I guess wanting to read about 9/11 like the rest of us.
Manny in New Jersey says allegedly he did more than that. Manny, you're on WNYC.
Hi, I just wanted to point out the fact that although I'm not condoning the actions of the correctional staff and the mistreatment of the individuals that were incarcerated, these individuals are not picked up based solely on their nationality or the fact that they're Muslim and from an Arab country. There were other criteria used, some of which
South Asian country in this case. Go ahead.
There were other criteria used, such as maybe the possibility that they were in contact with individuals overseas that are known to be either attending or under investigation for possibly being terrorists or financing terrorism. It's not that these people were picked just because of their...
Well, there seems to be a range, and maybe that was the case with some who were detained, but Alex Reinhart, attorney for Mr. Iqbal, whose case went to the Supreme Court, I don't expect that you're going to say that your client had any such contacts.
No, he didn't have any such contacts.
But there were none reported that I know of.
There were none reported that we know of, and every single individual who was detained and classified as of interest was eventually released without ever being charged with anything having to do with terrorism.
Everyone who was held in the Brooklyn, they
were charged. There were, I think we should be clear that both Iqbal and El Megrabi, the other plaintiff in the original case, did plead guilty to federal charges, relatively minor. In Mr. Iqbal's case, it was...
was using someone else's Social Security card.
Identity theft, exactly. Identity fraud. I mean, the...
For which he was deported, by the way, and lives in Pakistan now, correct?
Correct.
Go ahead, Nina.
Well, I was just going to say, I was looking back at the interview that I had with him and how... back in at the time of the lawsuit, and how wistfully he spoke of his love of the America that he'd experienced as a 7-Eleven clerk, a gas station attendant, you know, how customers brought him Thanksgiving dinner and Christmas gifts, but that then when he went to prison, he saw this other face of the United States, and that he was so haunted by the memories of the pain and humiliation in MDC that he was shaking at the sight of his own brother, who's a policeman in Pakistan, when he wore his uniform because he'd become so averse to that sight.
Jack on Staten Island says he's a retired police officer. Hi, Jack. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Good morning, Brian. I'd like to say great career and good, more power to him insofar as the lawsuit goes. If he was mistreated, then he needs to get that out.
Jack, thank you. And here's Mitch in Brooklyn, who I think also thinks that Ashcroft and the FBI director should be sued in this case. Mitch?
Yes. There should be sued. That's the same principle on which the law operates on everywhere in the world. That's the same principle on which we tried Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein never killed a single person. He never shot anybody, but it was his government.
Well, however, he ordered many people killed. So I think that's actually the distinction that's being made in this case. But Alex Reinhardt, attorney for Javad Iqbal, are you going to come around on this again after the Supreme Court ruling, which said you couldn't basically hold them responsible for ordering the detention that led to the abuse? Are you going to try to make a case that Ashcroft and Mueller were somehow more directly responsible for the abuse?
We certainly are, Brian. We are going to be going to the lower courts and asking for leave to amend the complaint to flesh out the allegations that we've made against General Ashcroft and Mr. Mueller.
Do you want to describe those allegations a little bit?
Well, to some extent, the allegations that we're going to be making are based on confidential information, and I can't actually make them public until we file the lawsuit. Everything that's been disclosed in this case has been designated confidential. I do want to point out a problem, though. For us, the opinion doesn't present a problem in terms of amending the complaint, but for future civil rights litigants who don't have access to the information that we've been able to get access to, there really is the potential that they won't be able to challenge governmental misconduct in the future. And that's what's one of the things that's troubling about the opinion in terms of its broader ramifications. But for us, we're confident that we can amend the allegations and specify in greater detail consistent with the court's opinion.
And I guess this court's opinion would be different from the Abu Ghraib-type cases, or the case might be different, where the allegation is that the harsh interrogation policies approved at the highest levels created the environment for other kinds of abuse. That's not what you're arguing,
right? That's not exactly what we're arguing. That's right.
Where's your client today, Pakistan?
He's in Pakistan.
Is he still involved in his case?
Oh, he certainly is. I mean, it's interesting. One ironic thing, following up on what Nina had said, is that in Pakistan, everyone has trouble believing that the U.S. got it wrong. So even in Pakistan, he's still sort of considered suspect because of the original classification that he received here. And the only reason he received that classification, as far as we can tell, is because of his race, his religion, his national origin.
The other plaintiff settled, Nina said, for $300,000. What are you hoping to get for him?
Well, for Mr. Iqbal, we're hoping to get some measure of justice. It can't really be measured by dollars, but in the end, I'm afraid it will be. But right now, we're hoping to continue with the case.
Nina Bernstein, any last word, thought from you on this case?
Well, I think that I'm just remembering how when I spoke with Iqbal, he said what he really was looking for was an apology, and not only an apology to him, but an apology to the American people.
Nina Bernstein, New York Times correspondent, who interviewed Javad Iqbal at the time of his detention or just thereafter. Alex Reinhardt, the attorney representing Mr. Iqbal. The Supreme Court yesterday ruled that this man abused in the Brooklyn Detention Center could not sue the FBI director and the former U.S. Attorney General. As we heard from his attorney, they're going to go at it a different way. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in just a minute. Why many New Jersey homeowners are protesting that their homes are officially worth too much money. And then another prison-related story, why prisoners in New Jersey are not being allowed to read a book of poetry that they wrote themselves. Stay with us.